dbkmediaservices.com.
Listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SBC Sports Talk is brought to you by SBCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. And now, here are your hosts, Shane Combs and Matt Combs.
Hello, SVC fans. I'm Shane Combs of SVCSportsZone.com. I'd like to welcome you to another week of the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk online radio show. Have a lot of feedback, a lot on the agenda this week, so I want to get right into it as I welcome my brother Matt, who will join me as throughout the fall before giving away in the winter, as he obviously gets a little busier at that time of year. But, you know, Matt, I don't want to waste much time. Have a lot to, of good topics and different things throughout the agenda. Wanted to start with two things that were coming up on the coaching discussion. We mentioned last week that we still thought this had a little bit of life, and some of the consistent feedback. I've tried to combine some of the things I'm getting so as many people feel like we're talking about what they had on their mind throughout the week. And I kind of had identical feedback from a parent as well as a coach. And as I talked to some different people, there were some people mentioning some of the things in the same lane, if you will, talking about willing to put the effort in if the other side is. And I had one parent talking about how a lot of times when they see that coach putting the effort in, they're willing to maybe put a little bit more money in. They're willing to maybe travel a little bit more, go do some different things. On the other side, some of my peers, some of the coaches are telling me, you know, in this new age of different workouts and different things, they don't mind putting the time in. They just hate showing up to the empty weight room or to the empty gym or to the empty baseball field. It's one of those things of it's that kind of that matching effort that we talked about. And, you know, I guess, Matt, there's two ways I want to look at this. One, I want to get your feedback just on that different matching, if you will, because what happens for a lot of people that maybe don't know, if you as a basketball coach say you're gonna commit to a shootout. Well, if you're supposed to go to a shootout on a Saturday morning, and all of a sudden on Friday you only have four kids or right at five kids, and you're trying to scramble to get kids, that's kind of frustrating on your end as well. So let's start there. How much pressure, or how difficult do you think it is when you're balancing these different things, trying to make sure you do the kids available and your roster available to go do some of these team events?
Well, I think that it's obviously a give and take, and nobody wants to, I mean, let's face it, nobody wants to waste their time or feel like they're wasting their time, whether they are or they aren't. And I think sometimes when coaches show up, like you say, to an empty open gym or an empty weight room, or, you know, three or four people are backing out on him the day before a shootout or a summer event, you know, it gets frustrating. I think sometimes a coach thinks, you know, what am I doing here? I'm spending time away from my family. I'm trying to do what's right for this program, and I'm not getting the cooperation. Then vice versa, I think there are times where maybe there's players wanting to work out, wanting to do some things, and maybe that coach isn't offering enough stuff, you know, for those kids and for the program. It's a two-way street, obviously. I mean, it's a give and take. Both sides have to be committed. I think ultimately, though, as a coach, if you're trying to run a program and you're being employed by your school to do so, I think ultimately it's your responsibility to offer those things. And even if maybe you don't feel like you're getting the participation that you want, or let's say it's not even that, because we're in the time of year right now, let's say basketball coaches, for instance, if you've got 85% of your kids playing volleyball or playing football, you know, it can be a little frustrating going to open gym thinking, man, I've got three or four kids here. I don't have my main people. But you know what? It's still important to offer those things, because the three or four kids that are there, let's try to get them better. I think ultimately the coach has to be the leader. They have to be the adult in the situation, and they have to say, you know, look, I'm offering this stuff. You need to be here if you can be here. But I'm going to be the constant. I am going to be the constant of this program. I'm going to be here. You're going to see my face. Am I going to see yours? You know, and that's really what it comes down to.
You know, Matt, the thing that jumped out at me in all the discussion is a couple of the different age groups. I totally agree with you at the high school level. I think it's a situation where, you know, I know the way I handle my off season, my preseason. You know, right now we're in a situation like what you're describing in terms of Paint Valley baseball. You probably have 90-95% of the kids playing a fall sport, but it's one of those things. If being an off season, preseason, if you have the opportunity to work with 1, 2, 3 kids, it's very valuable to strengthening the depth of your team. Maybe you're getting a chance to work with some younger kids that's going to strengthen a JV program or a junior high program, which is going to strengthen your program moving forward. So I agree with you. The other part of this, though, I see some of this and some of the feedback included this goes all the way down into how you're handling some of the Little League programs. And one of the biggest things that I've always looked at is I see a lot of these one grade driven programs. And what I mean by that is you'll get one of these groups come along every now and then where the parents really want to match the effort and they'll take their kids and they'll do different things. I guess the argument that I throw out there is work with your coach to strengthen the class ahead of you, the class behind you. If you have one of those really unique groups, don't be afraid to stay home a little bit more and work right there in your own gym to where you develop a little bit of that school-wide program rather than just that one grade. Because what I see so many times is I'll see one particular grade. You'll get those 6, 7, 8 kids. They grow up together. They travel. They do a lot of things. Well, you know, by the time they're sophomores, juniors, what if one moves away? What if one gets hurt? What if 2 or 3 simply don't grow as tall as you thought they would, or maybe become as athletic as you thought they would? And I don't see that help in front or behind where in that old school Little League program, so to speak. I think that's where I would like to see parents and coaches, because Matt, tell me if I'm wrong, I think where a lot of varsity coaches in all sports today get frustrated with Little League, they know they don't have the resources to do it the way they want to. And even if they were to try to do it that way, they would probably have a lot of resistance because people are looking around saying, well, wait a minute, this school's traveling to Logan to a tournament, and this school's going to Lancaster, and man, this school's doing this and that. And I think a little bit of that's where the difficulty. So that's another thing I would like to see the parent coach, when you get to the younger levels into the Little League Junior High, maybe worked to strengthen within. Do you follow me on that in terms of maybe that's a little different for a big school, small school, but I just think that's something that's really valuable to take a look at in this discussion.
Well, it is, and I think whenever you're dealing with the youth programs, I think as a coach you understand that, A, I have to have these people, these volunteers. I can't run this whole thing by myself. And I think ultimately what you want is participation. I think that's kind of what you're saying. You want as much participation as you can get.
Well, let me interrupt real quick. I as a coach, I want ultimate participation. But I think the debate is selling the parents on that, because I think if you're a parent in that elite group, you want those kids to – travel out a little bit more and get the elite competition rather than maybe staying home and maybe not having the Saturday morning game as competitive. You follow me on that?
No, I do. And I think you have to balance that as a head coach. You have to understand that, okay, I think if you try to fight it completely and say, I don't want that, you're going to turn people off.
Agree. Yeah.
You know, you're going to have some issues. And I think, look, if you want to, you know, Mr. Whoever, Mrs. Whoever, if you want to take this group of kids and coach them in travel basketball, you know, feel free to do so. But we also need to do some things as a group. How can we work together on this? You know, if you want to go on the weekends to Lancaster, Logan, wherever and play, can we also 2 nights a week get together with everybody here and let me put on a clinic? You know, let's work on some skills. Let's play some as just the, you know, Paint Valley Bearcats, Huntington Huntsman, whoever, you know what I mean? Right. And so I think as a coach, probably the way you have to handle that is work with your youth program director and say, how can we balance this out? I'm not trying to take away anything from you. I'm just trying to add, can we also do this? You know, and I think ultimately that's probably what you got to do, because if you try to fight that battle as a head coach, you're going to ultimately probably lose it, because these parents and these kids of some of the better players at an early age, they want to go out and play. So it's going to take some give and take on both ends, I think, to for both parties to be satisfied.
Well, and Matt, the other thing here before we move on from the coaching discussion, like we said, each week we'll let the fans drive it. The feedback continues to come, and I've enjoyed it, and it feels, you know, from what I'm sensing, the people listening are enjoying it. The other thing that came up this week was job of the coach to promote the program and the individual athletes. It talked about social media, the regular media, stats, interviews, so forth. And you know, you've obviously been doing this a long time, and I have been as well in multiple sports, and the website's certainly given me a different avenue to look at things. Maybe just your let's start, Matt, with your opinion on how much maybe you've started to look at using a social media and how your philosophy maybe as a coach in handling regular media, talking about individuals compared to the team.
With the day and age we live in, social media is going to be a part of everything. It just is. And I think as a coach, if you don't recognize that and evolve with it, so to speak, and try to utilize it in a positive way, I think you're just falling behind the times. And I know some people don't want to hear that, but the fact of the matter is, almost every single one of your players, if not all of them, I'd be shocked if not all of them, are on some level of social media, you know, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Vine, something. Okay. So one, you know, the kids are out there. This could be a whole show probably on social media. I don't want to make this a long answer, but you've got to look at this in several different ways. One, your kids are on it. So I think as a coach, you need to try to monitor that a little bit. And what are they saying on here? What are they doing? Because to say, hey, I don't want you on Facebook during the season, in today's day and age, that's unrealistic. You know, kids are going to be on this stuff. How about, you know, what the approach we've tried to take is, let's utilize it to positively promote our program. You know, we have a Facebook page. We have, you know, I use Twitter in all kinds of different ways. You know, we have a Twitter page for Benton County Athletics. I have a Twitter page for District 13 Coaches Association. I have, you know, you try to use this social media, I think, to positively promote your brand, so to speak, which is your school and your program. And because to just avoid it, that's not, I mean, do you understand what I'm saying? I don't think that's realistic. That's like, right. I mean, it's like back in the days when some coaches said, you know, we don't need to videotape our games. I don't, you know, I haven't watched video. We don't, well, you know, that changed. And it's to the point now where you use things like Huddle and Crossover, and your video's right there in front of you on the computer, and you can trade films and exchange, and you're sending stuff to recruiters for colleges. And you have to promote, I think, in a positive fashion, your program, because one, I think it's part of your job as a coach, to be honest with you. And two, I think you owe it to your kids a little bit. It's just like cooperating with the media, you know, calling into the scoreboard show on Friday night, giving your stats to the newspaper or local media outlets. You know, as well as I do, you don't always feel like calling into the scoreboard show when you've got your butt kicked and it's been a miserable night, but it's something you do because it's part of your job, and it's kind of, you know, it's just part of your responsibilities. And I think that the social media is quickly becoming that. It's almost like you've got to use it. It's out there, so you can either run away from it as fast as you can, but it's going to catch you, or try to use it in a positive way to promote your program.
Well, and I guess I try to, and you touched on this, I try to educate my players on how I'm going to use it and how I hope we as a group use it. It goes to that thing of, you know, obviously what we're trying to do is very team driven, but I'm very demanding on the kids with their time and the procedures. I guess I try to promote it from the standpoint of you try to teach them how to be good teammates, how to be good friends, so forth. I look at it as a simple example. I tell people all the time, look, if you're 0-3 and maybe you're not very happy with your performance that night, you're not a very good teammate if you're not able to recognize, hey, so-and-so is 3-3 tonight. I know they really worked hard in the cage this week. They're 3-3. You need to go let them know. You see what I'm saying? It's one of those things where sometimes we get so worked up of singling out a kid or doing a, you know, there's nothing wrong with highlighting a kid's accomplishment. I know throughout the year, I'll always try my best to look to highlight the different things. And that's different things. You know, this is a basketball coach on a scoreboard show. Maybe I'm going to highlight so-and-so because, you know, they score 20 a night. But at the same time, I'm going to get an opportunity to talk about, hey, so-and-so is really setting some good screens. So-and-so played the point tonight for 22 minutes and only turned it over one time. You know, you're able to go far beyond the stat sheet in those particular forums and talk a little bit about all of those intangibles that go into the team concept. So, yeah, I'm not saying anyone's mastered it, but to just ignore it, I think really can send the wrong message to everybody involved. So, I really have enjoyed the feedback. As long as it keeps coming, I think, Matt, you said it last week, we don't want to beat the dead horse, but what's neat about this is there's been some different avenues that kind of branch off and keep going. So as long as the fans want to do that, we'll certainly continue to discuss it. But I do want to move into highlighting one of our elite programs really in the history of the SVC, if you want to be quite honest. And with it being the Uniota golf team, we'll have this brought to the fans by Crown Hill Golf Club. Obviously, they've been a great sponsor for us. You can check the ad out down on the bottom of the homepage there, Crown Hill Golf Club 740-986 golf. They really have some great deals in terms of some membership things you can take a look at, or if you're just wanting more of an individual round, you can do that as well. But you know, Matt, obviously with the Uniota golf team on their way to the state tournament, exciting time for them. You know, you look back at we discussed a little bit of their district success there with Cooper and Atkins, Freeman, Carr, and Calvin, all playing extremely well. Coach Drummond going there, I think it's the seventh time in school history, all under him, of course. And they're unfortunate for Piketon, only one team got out, but nonetheless, that Piketon team's going to have some nice kids back. They're going to be really, really good again. But, you know, Matt, real quick, I wanted to just kind of maybe give the fans something to think about later in the week, because, you know, golf's not really a sport unless maybe you have a friend or family member playing or whatever that, you know, you go and travel and watch like you would, say, a football team or a basketball team, so baseball, softball. I wanted to maybe just give the fans something to maybe keep an eye on, some different things. They're going to play at North Star Golf Club up in Sunbury, Ohio. Looks like Friday morning at 9:10, the Uniota 5-man will go off, and then every 8 minutes, another Uniota player will be going off with Cooper. Looks like he'll be there about 9:42, if my math is correct, and that's all off the first tee. And When I look at the golf course, I see a lot of water compared to maybe what we would see here locally. And depending on, they have about 5-6 different tees they can play. It looks like it could play anywhere from the mid 6,000s to the mid 7,000s. And I was just going to maybe ask you 2-3 questions here, Matt, and let you kind of run with it in a summary before we move into the rest of a busy agenda tonight. When you think of a course with a lot of water, kind of what does that do? Maybe give the fans a little bit of some feedback in terms of what it, you notice play JC's and Crown Hill, two courses they're very familiar with. When you go and play a course with a lot of water and you're not as experienced on a course, what are some of the challenges that brings into it to a golfer?
Well, I think some of these kids, especially from Uniota, they've played some different golf courses now. So, you know, I don't think they'll be swallowed up by the course, so to speak. They, you know, a lot of times around our area, you have kind of two different types of golf courses, in my opinion. You sort of have golf courses that are like target golf, where they might not be real long. You've got to hit shots. You've got to place your ball. And then you've got some golf courses where you can sort of you know, grip it and rip it and let it go. And there's not a whole lot of like hazards like you're talking about, but it's more of a link thing. When you get to this level, when you start playing a course like North Star, which some people may disagree with this, and I haven't played North Star a lot. I've played it a couple times. It reminds you a little bit of like a Players Club where it's both. It's lengthy.
Right.
But like you said, you've got that trouble. You know, you've got water, you've got hazards, you've got things that can really put you in a bind. So that's where the challenge is, and that's why obviously at this level you play a golf course like that. But I think ultimately, at this level, you've got to just, I don't want to say play defensively, but you have to at times take your medicine and play a little bit conservatively and say, okay, look, you know, I'm not going to try to be a hero on this particular shot. I've got to keep myself in play here. I've got to avoid the big miss, so to speak, that's going to really give me a number that I don't want. So there's some of those things. And really, that takes you into probably the biggest thing at this level is the mental aspect of it, handling the fact that you're playing in the state tournament, handling the excitement, handling the pressure. Those are the things I think that ultimately it probably comes down to.
Is it that combination of not knowing the course added in with that pressure that sometimes, you know, maybe can add into the commitment of a shot and so forth? When you know, obviously those Juniata kids are never going to have a tee or a particular angle at JC's that they're not familiar with. You know, does that add in a little bit to the pressure when you're maybe a little bit, you know, not committed, so to speak, to a certain shot?
Well, definitely it does. Obviously, golf's a game of course knowledge. A lot of times you're going to feel more comfortable the more times you played somewhere. I don't know who's all in the state tournament, obviously. I'm assuming most schools are in the same boat, that they don't play there a lot.
Right.
Maybe there is one or two schools from the Columbus area up there that do play it more. I'm not sure. I don't know what the practice round situation is. You know, how many times Juniata is going to get to go play it before they actually play it in the tournament. I'm sure I'm assuming they've gotten up there once or will get up there, you know, but it's, yeah, I mean, at this level, most teams are playing the course, are playing a course that they're not real familiar with. So sure. I mean, that always adds a little bit of, I think, nervousness.
Well, Matt, as one of the all-time best programs is preparing for state, the league's best program in the history of our great conference returned to the championship circle this past week. I'm all right, nobody but about me. Why you got to give me a fight? Can't you just let it be? Well, the Edina Lady Warriors obviously have set quite a bar in terms of programs across the history of our conference. And, you know, we were partly joking with our headline a little bit this past week, Matt. You know, when you haven't won the league in 3 years, is it fair to call that a drought? And, you know, when you've won 21 of the previous 22, you can certainly see why people were saying that to me. And, you know, in all seriousness, obviously, you know, Juniata comes out there last year. I'll see we've had Westfall, we've had Zane Trace over the last 3 years winning the league. And, you know, now Edina kind of returns to the top. As they get the big win over Juniata earlier in the week, had a chance to go out and watch that match. And, you know, a lot of good talent. Certainly two teams that have a lot of really high-level volleyball in front of them, not just this year but in years to come. I thought at the end of the four-set match there that ended 28-26, maybe just a little bit of that experience of Edina, some of that big match you know, experience kind of comes through. You know, so much has been made of how young all the teams are, but, you know, on one side of the net, when it comes to that level of volleyball, you have basically one kid on Juniata who was served a little bit last year. And then on the Edina side, you know, yes, they are young, but they also have about four or five kids that played in the state tournament last year. So, I thought that showed up a little bit, but obviously an amazing week. When you think of Piketon beating Westfall, and then Westfall turning around 48 hours later and beating Huntington, and that kind of opened the door for all of this to happen for Adina. But I think the neat thing about it, Matt, is Adina now chases the gold ball, and everybody starts to look to the postseason. I heard Coach Ridenour of Uniota talking about that. Going to have an opportunity to definitely play and hopefully win a sectional title. I was looking at some of the brackets, and we are going to have an all-SVC, I believe. Gosh, I wish I had printed that off because they just had come out today as we're recording on Sunday night. I believe Southeastern Zane Trace have to play one another. But other than that, I mean, we honestly have an opportunity. Paint Valley's kind of in a tough situation in D4 there in the bracket they're in. I think they can win their first game. They'll have trouble maybe winning the final. But you know, we could really realistically put six teams out to the district and two or three maybe to the regional. So when you look at Adina chasing the gold ball, I think the neat concept here, Matt, is you're going to have a lot of tournament tune-ups, if you will, this week. Because when you start thinking about Adina Westfall, and then you think of Adina, let's say Adina is going for the gold ball Thursday night when the Huntington group has senior night. You know, Huntington's another team. When you look at the bracket, they've already beaten head-to-head some of the teams they're going to play in the district. They're a regional caliber team. I mean, you're kind of looking at a regional caliber Division III volleyball match there Thursday night. What better way to get tuned up than to have those types of things on your schedule? I assume as a coach you'd love that.
Well, yeah, I think with Adina, they just seem like they've taken a very steady approach to everything this year, and you know, the old cliche, I guess, taking things one game at a time. But they just seem like they sort of do that. They don't really get too high, too low. It just seems like they're very steady. And I think for them, they'll probably continue to take that same approach. But at the same time, like you said, it is, I think, a positive. For a team like, well, for all of those teams, but just take Adina, for instance, they're in a situation where they've accomplished one of their goals, I'm sure, coming into the season in terms of the league. Now they're going to set their sights on a gold ball. They're going to set their sights on a deep tournament run. So these types of games late in the year, I think, are a real positive for them. And obviously, just take like the Adina-Huntington matchup, like you said about Huntington, to get to play a team of that caliber right there before you go into tournament play, that sort of gets you ready, I guess, competitively also. So, it's this time of year, it depends where you're at as a team as to where your sights are. If you're Adina, you still have some regular season things to take care of because I'm sure they want the gold ball. I'm sure they want to finish this off, you know, with an unblemished record. If you're other teams and, you know, you start to shift your focus toward the postseason, I think, and everything you do sort of rallies around that. So I think each team will benefit. Each team probably has some different priorities right now, but each team should benefit from a game like that.
Matt, quickly here before we move into the feature segment of this week's show, I've stayed up late a lot the last couple of nights watching the President's Cup. I'm a huge fan, obviously, of baseball. I watch a ton of playoff baseball. And there's something about in every sport when you get into the highest level of competition, and it's kind of an all or nothing win or go home mentality. Everything seems to magnify a little bit. And there's just something, it made me think about Adina, and it made me think about that match the other night. There's something about just the system and the organization they play with. How important is that? For a fan that maybe hasn't experienced that before, can you put into words and explain kind of what happens in that tournament time in terms of how it's the same game, obviously, but it seems to be done with just a little bit more intensity. It seems to be done with just a little bit more speed, anxiety. Yeah, help me out there in terms of explaining that to people.
Well, I think I mentioned this on one of our shows earlier this fall, that when the pressure's on in those situations, I think that teams that believe in what they do on a daily basis, believe in their system, believe in the way they practice, believe in the way they go about their business, their scheme, whatever, I think those are the teams that tend to be able to relax in pressure situations. You know, I think that some coaches do a great job of getting their teams being comfortable, being uncomfortable, if that makes sense. You know, they're always sure. putting their kids in tough situations in practice, challenging them, so that when they get in pressure situations, they sort of feel like, ah, we've been there, we've done, you know, we've handled this. So I think the system, like you say, is crucial. And I think if you like to, if for Adina, for instance, if you find yourself in the regionals or state tournament and you're up against it a little bit, why wouldn't you be confident in your system and what you do? I mean, obviously that's something to draw from. So yeah, I think teams that take Unita Golf, for instance, we talked about them a few minutes ago, same thing in golf. I mean, the way Coach Drummond conducts his practices, his approach, those kids have ground zero sort of to go to in a pressure situation and take a deep breath and say, this is how we do what we do. And I think that's important as you get into tournament play.
All of this is really good stuff, and I kind of want to touch on this a little bit more as we get into the next couple of weeks. Obviously, want to congratulate the Adina Lady Warriors. I think we have a ton of volleyball to talk about in the weeks to come. Obviously, I'll get into the all-league discussion here on the website. We'll talk a lot of postseason volleyball, which I think at the sectional levels I just talked about, those brackets are up on the website now. The sectional level will just be getting started, if you will. I mean, obviously, district regional are going to be in play for the league. But, Matt, on the feature this week, I want to stay with volleyball. This league has set the standard in Southeast Ohio for a while now, and next we look at some of the all-time best. All-time SVC volleyball team. Matt, it's something that people have asked me. Honestly, this goes all the way back to last year. We were going to throw it into the winter segment one time. We thought, now let's save it to fall. And then people again in the spring, a couple people were asking me. And then the conversation started to generate back up. And so it's something that we certainly haven't ignored. I think it's a great idea. We had done this similar thing for some basketball, and we got into volleyball. Now, when I do these types of things with most sports, I tell people that I can go back to about 89, 90, 91, somewhere in there, especially if you're talking boys basketball, even some girls basketball. Even for the most part, some volleyball, I can remember watching. But the difference in volleyball, Matt, I didn't quite understand the game real, real well till right around 2002, 2003, to the point to where right around the 2004, 2005 season is where I really started to be able to watch the game more with a coach's eye or a higher level of understanding of what was really going on. So when I started doing this, I started thinking it would be really unfair of me to sit here and try to evaluate players throughout the 90s, throughout the 80s, and so forth. So I thought to generate the discussion, I thought I would throw out since about 2004, 2005, somewhere in that ballpark is where I was going to go back. And I was also going to keep all active players off of this. So whatever your opinions are of kids still playing, I thought we would hold them off of this list for now and really kind of honor the history of our conference. So, you know, when I go back, I obviously understand where I cut off. There's a lot of different players that are going to get a lot of discussion, a lot of exposure. I think of obviously Emily Hammond comes to mind, Kelsey Sewards, Lisa Strauff, Carrie Ross, Kathy Hatfield. These were all, if you look back on our history page, if you go to our volleyball page up top, you will see a history link. So again, to walk you through that, if you go to the volleyball homepage up top, you'll see a gray box. where it talks about volleyball archives. You simply click that, and then you'll come to an archives page. It takes you back through the history of our website that started in 2008. You'll see a link that says, look at SVC volleyball history. It'll show you every player of the year going all the way back to 1976 when volleyball first started. And a lot of those names I just mentioned, Matt, were two-time player of the year. So obviously, I see other names like Sidney Conley. I know that Huntington team somewhere in there went to the state. I know you're familiar as you were coming up as a student, Lori McClellan, Natalie Hill. There's a lot of different kids that are going to get a lot of exposure. But for what I'm doing here, just to get us started, I'm going back to right around the 04-05. And that's about where, again, where I am able to comment. So when I start my lineup, I'm a big person with the setter position. I like the 5-1 offense. I love having that quarterback, that leader on the floor. So when I think of the best setter I've watched during that time period, I would go with Katie Corey of Edina. Katie was an outstanding player. She was a two-time player of the year. You look at Adina's record from 08 to 11 when she was the setter. I think it would be hard to argue that she could do much better, Matt, considering she did not lose a league match as a four-year starter. And when I look at just her ability to, with her size, she could defend the net. She could defend coming off the net. But then obviously she had great hands. She had great vision. She could do just a little bit of everything. Good server, great leader. Loved how she handled her teammates. Then I would start to look at my all-around players. The best player during that time period, I don't think is up for debate. I would think it would be Cassie Sauer. She was outstanding. She was a three-time player of the year. Some argue she could have been a four-time player of the year. She had a teammate. I don't have that in front of me. I believe it was Malia Thornton, her freshman year. She played on some really good teams when she was younger. But Cassie was outstanding. She could do a little bit of everything. Obviously went on to play Division I volleyball at the next level. I would also include on my first team Haley Carl, Alexis Overly, and Courtney Jenkins. I think those were three kids. Haley was the player of the year from Zane Trace. Alexis was a player of the year from Uniota. Courtney Jenkins, I don't believe, was ever player of the year, because if I remember correctly, she played at the same time Sowers did. But Courtney was an outstanding player. All of those kids had similar characteristics where they could do a little bit of everything. And then I would try to add in a little bit more presence at the net. I would go Ashley Jordan as a middle hitter. And then if I were going to utilize a passer at the libero position, I would go with Elena Lytle. I think she's the best I've seen statistically. She obviously had a great career with 2,000 digs. But, you know, honestly, Matt, beyond the stat sheet on something like this, I just try to go with the eye test as much as anything. And I just don't know that I've seen a passer that can cover. So that's probably where I would go with my first team. That would be, you know, seven kids, obviously, with Elena being a passer. So it's kind of like doing it like a real volleyball lineup. And you know, if I were to stretch this out to a second team, that's probably when the debate. I don't know that I would get a ton of debate off that first team. I think some names like Jackie Kello, Olivia Cobb, some of those names. Amanda Curry is a name that comes up that I would probably put on there. But I think of some other names that come up, Megan Foltz, Olivia Arledge, Jess Rupke was a player of the year. I think some of the Adina kids that maybe I would look at. I loved Jenny Grigsby as a winner. The Yates girl was a good winner. Kelsey Bellano was a really good player. Coy Tackett, because I think what would have to happen there on the second team is I would probably have to I wouldn't have as many kids playing all the way around. I think what separates from the first to second team, and Matt, you could probably do this in other sports that you think of, what separates the elite are the kids that can do a little bit of it all, if you will, compared to maybe a specific skill. And then I thought Haley Ingram was a kid at Huntington that was kind of an overlooked talent, didn't get nearly enough credit. So, again, on a second team, if I were going to do this, the reason you hear so many more names, probably other than, gosh, if I was to put that into a real lineup, probably maybe other than Olivia Cobb, I'd probably have to go to a 6-2 offense on that second team. Other than Cobb, I don't know that anyone would play all the way around. So, I again, I could obviously would get Jackie Kello and and Rupke and Curry and Bolano hitting, but I'd probably use Coy and Tackett, Grigsby, maybe even Fultz, you know, to do some of the passing there. Maybe you use Oliviarlage in the middle. So, you know, Matt, I know volleyball wise isn't something you followed as detail. You obviously know those names I just said, but rather than talking to you about an all-time team, I guess, and we touched on this last week, how much of an honor, first of all, is it just to have the name come up in discussion? Because obviously everyone's going to have a different opinion. If I ask this person here to give me, hey, give me 6-7 names for a first team in the last 10 years of an incredible conference, the debate's going to get crazy. And that's awesome, because I think what it does, what people lose sight of is the idea of doing this is to highlight a lot of great names for our current players to look back and say, wow, you know, this is something that, you know, is a really neat thing in our conference. So I guess what I'd ask you is just, what does it say to even have your name brought up? And I'm only going back 10 years. Obviously, as I mentioned before, there's another 10, 20 years to look back at here. Just your thoughts on how elite this amazing list would be in a conference like our volleyball in the SVC.
Well, I think it makes it awfully tough to put together the list to begin with, because the league's had so many great players, even in the amount of time you're dealing with over a 10-year period or 12-year period or whatever. So obviously, if 10 years after you graduate, people still bring your name up every now and then, I think that says a lot about the type of player you were. But it's difficult to put together a list like this. Anytime you do all time anything, teams or players or whatever, there's always going to be debate. That's what makes it fun, though. Everyone's going to have a different opinion. I guarantee you there's people listening that says, I can't believe he forgot this person. Well, how can you leave this person off? And that's okay, because that's kind of what makes it fun and enjoyable. So, like you said, you're sort of getting the discussion started. I'm sure we'll get a lot of feedback on this, and there'll be names that get brought up that weren't on your list and that are great players. But like you said, in the SVC, when you've had the tradition in volleyball that this league has had, like you said, going back way farther than what you're dealing with here in terms of time frame. It's tough to put together a list, but I think if your name still comes up years after you graduate, I think it does show the type of player that you were.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to be most interested in, and then we'll obviously let the fans drive the discussion. But the thing that I'm going to be most interested in is I'm pretty confident with about my top 10 players here. I put 7 of them onto a first team. Certainly a couple of those names could have an argument for a spot on that first team. But I guess what I want to know is someone who has watched volleyball over the last 30 years with the same passion that I've watched it with over the last 10. Tell me who would start to creep into that list and knock certain people out of there. You know, compare an Emily Hammond to some of these players that we've had. Obviously, she was a phenomenal player. Compare a Carrie Ross, a Lisa Strouth. Compare a Lisa Strouth as an outside hitter to a Haley Carl, Alexis Overly, Cassie Sowers. Kind of educate me on that, because, you know, I can do a lot of those things in basketball, but because my volleyball training, if you will, didn't come to much later, when we were really blessed to grow up with family playing some pretty elite volleyball. Obviously, my wife's helped me a lot along the way with that. But it's really turned into one of my favorite sports. If I could sit down and watch a really, really well played volleyball game, and I would put it right up there with just about any sport in terms of enjoyment. So, you know, fans, you can let me know at admin1@svcsportzone.com. You let us know there in the inbox. Just kind of throw out some names. If you have a particular discussion question, let us know. We can get Bruce to put some audio to it. If you want to simply call in yourself and leave your own audio, you can do that as well. The number is 740-569-3254. But a lot of fun to do that. We do the all-league team every year. I'll be doing that here, obviously, as the season comes to an end. But I definitely wanted to highlight a little bit of the history of this great conference. My first team coach would, of course, be Laura Smith. My second team coach there would be Lori Merriman. Lori Coker now that's over at Zane Trace, who's a longtime coach there at Westfall. I think that that's a no-brainer as far as I'm concerned. But again, as you go back to the history, there are two or three other names that that have had some great success that that maybe we would want to highlight as well. So I'll tell you what, let's return to the present-day SVC. And let's turn our attention to football, as the league still appears to have far more to decide than perhaps we thought. Well, Matt, I'm going to have to go ahead and have kind of a moment of honesty here and be the first to admit that I was a little bit shocked, a little bit confused on what took place Friday night. I had seen some teams play in person, and I was doing some cross matchups there and some different things. And, you know, we had made a lot of the conditions when Zane Trace Paint Valley played. And, you know, now all of a sudden, Adina, Zane Trace, they play kind of the pitcher's duel by football standards, if you will. And Zane Trace gets out of there with a 9-6 victory. And here's what I've come to figure out, and tell me if I'm wrong, because I certainly need some help here with this football league. This football league's turned in far more competitive than I thought it was going to be. I think that we get so wrapped up with skill kids. It's fun to look at, you know, hey, Mowry can do this on the outside, or Anthony Antigua McFadden can do this. The Hatfield kid on the outside can do this, or the Brewster kid at Piketon can do this. And Adina certainly has some skill kids, don't get me wrong. But I think what's really maybe getting lost in all of this is the incredible consistency of physicality, size, technique that Adina continues to bring to the trenches every single year on both sides of the ball. And I think that's really what went to work Friday night and really put Zane Trace into a dogfight. And I think it's something that is made for a really competitive league. It's really been fun to follow. Matt, just your thoughts there on Adina's effort Friday night and your reaction when you saw the score on your way back from the game you attended.
Well, two things jumped in my mind when I first heard of the final score, and I'd been following it a little bit, just looking up the score throughout the evening, and knew that it was that type of game. And then when I heard the final ended up what it was, one, I was impressed with Adina's, you know, ability, because we talked about Adina being a team that might be able to get one of these high-powered offensive teams in the league into a slugfest, so to speak, a game of time of possession, maybe a little slower pace, lower scoring affair. And I think anybody that's seen Zane Trace or seen Adina without even watching that game would at least assume that Adina sort of got that game into the, I don't know if tempo is the right word, but sort of the way they wanted it to be played. But the other thing that jumped to my mind, and you and I've talked about this a lot over the years, is I think if you're a great team in whatever sport it is, you have the ability, you obviously have an identity of how you want to play, but you have the ability to win a game, to win different styles of games. You have the ability to win a game where maybe you don't get to play it exactly the way you had hoped. And I think I was impressed with Zane Trace from that standpoint. We've seen them be explosive and score a lot of points. Right. I think we should be equally as impressed that they're able to win a game against a team like Adina, sort of having to play Adina's game, so to speak, if you know what I mean. So
sure,
I think that's because I know the Paint Valley Zane Trace was low scoring, but let's face it, a lot of that did have to do with conditions and stuff on that particular night. I just don't know if those teams get together and it's 70 degrees and sunny if that scores 15-8. Okay. But this game, you know, was obviously played lower scoring than probably what a lot of Zane Trace people thought it might be or whatever. And to be able to still gut it out and find a way to win, I think you still have to give Zane Trace a lot of credit.
Right. Well, and when you talk about completeness and you talk about a championship team, there's two or three things that jump out at me. We talk about the kicking game every year on SVC Sports Talk. Your Darby Pillow kicks a 30-yard field goal for the game's only points there in the first half. Well, that ends up being the difference in the game. ZT blocked a Nadina punt there in the third quarter to give the Pioneers a short field. So do keep in mind Zane Trace still playing without their starting quarterback. You know, he took over. Was that his sophomore year, I believe, when Tyler Henney got hurt pretty early in the year? So really, you know, you're losing a 3-year starter at quarterback, and Joel Dunkel, and then Austin Harris has really stepped in and done a nice job. I know they turned it over a little bit the other night, but he has a 2-yard TD run. At the time, Zane Trace was up 9-0 there, and then Isaac Thomas catches the 69-yard touchdown pass, and he gets hurt too. So, you know, injuries obviously play a little role in this and depth. But, yeah, I agree, Matt. You know, we talk a lot of times, if you're going to go undefeated in any sport, you saw it with Adena baseball last year a little bit. We've talked about it with the Uniota boys basketball team. At some point, you're just not going to quite get to play the exact same type of game for 10 straight weeks in football. So you are going to have to maybe at some point win a 30-28 game, win a 9-6 game, and they've certainly have shown the ability to do that. I do want to look around the league just a little bit more. Congratulations, Tegan McFadden. He becomes Paint Valley's all-time leading rusher. And Matt, when you think back growing up, now that you and I have been around long enough to really follow SVC Sports a while, you're talking about some pretty good running backs there that you could probably start naming off the top of your head over the last 30 years there at Paint Valley. So to have your name at the top of that list is certainly an accomplishment. So congratulations to Tegan on that as Paint Valley rolls on homecoming night over Southeastern. The Brewster kid had quite a night there for Piketon. He's getting some looks in our Herbie Strange Athlete of the Week, although that's still really, really close. Another name I'm seeing come in, Clay Edler. Playing quarterback now for Uniota. It was good to see the Shermans start to get a little healthy and get everybody back on the field. They put up 57, so they're starting to look a little bit more like the Uniota that we thought we would see. Football-wise across the way here, and you know, now it's Piketon's turn to kind of take their shot as Zane Trace kind of maybe too starting to play at that pressure of having the bullseye and taking everyone's best shot, where, you know, you see a Uniota, you see a Paint Valley, they might be the type of team that becomes really dangerous now because they might feel a little bit of the pressure off. It'll just be interesting to see now how Piketon responds and how Zane Trace responds to a matchup coming like that. Just your thoughts on the rest of the action around the league the other night and maybe what you're looking forward to in this upcoming Friday night.
Well, I think you hit it on the head. I think that when you start to see the light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak, you have to be careful not to look too far ahead and really stay in the moment. And I think, like you said, to be fair, obviously when you lose your starting quarterback, that's never easy. And fortunately for Zane Trace, it sounds like they've got a backup that's very capable. A lot of teams would really be in a pinch if you, sure, you know, with who they may have to bring in. And so I'm sure Zane Trace is thankful for that, but I don't know, when you see a game like the other night, when they survive a scare, so to speak, I kind of would hate to play Zane Trace right after that, you know, because I think that they sort of, man, it's almost like a wake-up call. You know, this thing's not done yet. We've got to play every week. And I would have a feeling that they're going to be awfully, awfully focused going into their next game. But I do think team like Piketon has a lot of potential. Anytime you have a kid like that at quarterback who can make plays, a scheme offensively that's creative, they've got the ability to score points. I think for them, the question will be physically if they can just match up and handle themselves defensively at the line of scrimmage and things like that. So it'll be interesting. The thing this year about football across the area I've noticed too is just it's been a little more unpredictable. To me, there's some teams just throughout the Southeastern Ohio that maybe are usually powerhouses that maybe aren't quite what they are normally are, or some teams that normally, you know, aren't real good or having some of their best years. So it just sort of makes things unpredictable. And even the SVC to an extent has been a little bit unpredictable. I don't know that we've had major upsets, but we've had some close calls. We've had some teams, you know, maybe underachieved due to injuries or due to situations. So it's awfully tough to predict what will happen. I would think that as the season winds down here over the last 3 weeks, we're probably not done completely with the surprises. It just seems like it's one of those years where something's going to happen to catch our attention again.
I think a follow-up question I have for the weeks to come, Matt, and I guess since I've worded it that way, I'm going to go ahead and put it into our What's Next segment that we like to end the show with each week. And, of course, as always, this is brought to you by the Crown Hill Golf Club, 740-986-GOLF. Again, appreciate Crown Hill Golf Club and their support. But, you know, Matt, the first thing I'll ask you then moving forward, it's terrible. His name slips my mind. The longtime Texas football coach works for Mac Brown.
Yes.
Yeah. He was talking the other day about how when you're going to go play big games on the road, or you're going to get in, he was talking eventually into the playoff format. You always want to invite your defense and your special teams to the party. You know what I mean? It better be one of those things where you can stop the run. You get your special teams to be solid. And I got kind of got me thinking a little bit in the high school level. You certainly understand why, you know, Adina is successful, and it got me thinking about Zane Trace Paint Valley. And I would love to hear from people in terms of, out of all the football now, even if you follow a school, we're getting deep enough into the year where you've probably seen most of these teams at least one time in person, or maybe you're someone who likes to travel around and watch the best game. Maybe you've seen some of the teams multiple times. Tell us a little bit in terms of how well you think some of these teams are built for the postseason. Is this the type of year where the SVC can get over the hump a little bit more and get multiple teams into maybe even not just week 11, but maybe even week 12? I would love to hear that. And then my other question for you, Matt, is some people starting to bring basketball into the inbox just kind of vaguely, briefly. This always happens about this time of year. You won't be with us in the winter. Is there anything basketball-wise that you would love to hear some feedback here early enough for you to get to talk about it? Because, again, you don't always get to join us in the winter. Is there something over these next, say, 2, 3, 4 shows, however many we do, that jumps out at you from a basketball standpoint that you would love to hear what the fans have to say, just to give you the opportunity to respond?
Well, I think the obvious thing in boys basketball first, the year Uniota had last year was obviously phenomenal. They, you know, anytime you win your first 26 basketball games or whatever, I mean, it's it's a pretty special year. But obviously, I think a lot of people, and rightfully so, expect Uniota to be a very good basketball team again this year. I mean, it goes without saying that they had some key losses to graduation. I know we, you know, with Corcoran, with Overly, you know, with Atkins and Strange and whoever else, whoever I'm forgetting that graduated for them, but they lost some key guys, but they have a lot of talent coming back. It'd be interesting to get the fans' take on the league in terms of do they think Uniota's the team again? Do they think there's some other teams? Is there going to be a little more parity across the board? I know the league graduated some really good players last year. Sure. Whether it be a Wyatt Brewster, whether it be the Cartier kid from Miles and Cartier from Southeastern. I mean, there was some and the kids I mentioned from Uniota, there were some good players graduate out of that. Obviously, Paint Valley graduated.
There be
2,000 point scores.
You overly know what I mean? Atkins, Strange, and Corcoran. Were those
right.
The Uniota kid? Yeah.
Yeah. And then Paint Valley graduated 2,000 point scorers. How many times that happened on the same team? So
sure.
There's some good players that graduated from the league. What's the league going to be like? Is it going to be better top to bottom? Is it going to be, you know, a little bit worse? Obviously, it's not going to be bad, because I know some of the teams in that league and some of the players, and there's some really good players in that league. So maybe just, you know, get the listeners' takes on that. And then I think on the girls' side, same thing. You know, Uniota obviously won the league last year, graduated a lot. But you know that program, and we've seen it in volleyball. They have players waiting in the wings. There's going to be other kids stepping up, wanting to contribute. Obviously, you've got Southeastern with two really talented players in Ellis Keynes and Wheeler, and then a lot of solid role kids. Westfall's talented. What do we think about the girls' league in just terms of is it wide open? Is there a prohibited favorite? You know, I think those are the things when you're talking early on that you talk about, because what else do you talk about, a month and a half before games even start?
Well, kind of as a teaser, I won't get into it right now, obviously. This actually had come in over the summer, and I thought that it would make better topic for the end of the fall. SVC fans, if you are a big fan of basketball especially, but really just in general of the league, there is a question that I'm really looking forward to asking my brother here on this show about one of the league's top talents that, again, had come in over the summer. I think you'll really, really enjoy that discussion. So, again, I'm going to be fitting that in here in a couple weeks down the road. So I kind of throw that out there as a teaser as well. But obviously, fans, let us know anything, everything you want us to talk SVC. Again, that inbox is admin1@svcsportzone.com. So on that note, until next time, for Triple Crown Family Fun Center in Chillicothe, as well as all the other sponsors on the website, for Bruce Knox and DBK Media Services, and for Matt Combs, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting svcsportzone.com, where we are 100% SVC, 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by svcsportszone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. And visit svcsportszone.com, where we're 100% SVC, 100% of the time.